Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on. Peace.
Yes, yes, yes. It is Thursday night once again, and it's quite naturally, it's the FSP Crew Show. I am your host, JT, and I'm joined by my host, co-host, Jeff the Joker, and we make up the two-thirds of the FSP Crew Show. Black the Bookie is unavailable at the present time, but Jeff and I can engage in that conversation that we always have and give you information about the wonderful, crazy, and interesting world of fantasy, sports, and politics. We have a good show in store for you tonight. Not good. We have a great show in store for you tonight. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. I'll tell you that again like I always do, 347-637-3220. The chat room is open. Bring it on in the chat room if you like. Question, comment, statement, whatever you like. We listen to all. We respond to all. Like I said, we're going to be talking about some NBA playoffs, some NFL news and notes that's been going on, other interesting things that may be going on in the world of sports and politics or whatever, whatever hits our mind at the time. You know what? The Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics are locked in a battle to take on the Oklahoma City Thunder. And before I go into that, how about I do this? You know, I'm so used to talking and talking and talking, and my co-host is sitting there waiting like, what the hell is he doing? Let's bring in my co-host, Jeff the Joker, and say hello to him. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Jerry. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the show.
Jeff, like I was about to say, when we last saw the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics locked in a real tight game, one of the things that happened near the end of the game, I could just, if minds could talk, this is what LeBron would say.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
Pierce for three. It's good. Paul Pierce from way downtown. And Boston leads by four. Big three-pointers here in the fourth quarter. That reminded me of James Harden last night. Not a lot going on in that possession. Pierce staring down LeBron James and then rising up against a contest and puts it right down the middle.
Struggling all night long with his shot. One of the underrated clutch players in the NBA.
And LeBron, I hate to tell you this, my man, and I'm not hating on you, but...
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
LeBron, Paul Pierce is the truth, and when it counted, you could not handle the truth. Talking about the Miami Heat against the Boston Celtics, Game 6. Is it going to be a replay of what happened yesterday? The favorite team supposedly wins the first two games, and then unceremoniously, just like what happened yesterday, do the Boston Celtics at home, I mean, this is like deja vu all over again, at home, close out the much talked about, much hyped, much scrutinized Miami Heat in Game 6 in Boston Garden tonight. Jeff, talk to me. I laid it out for you. Talk to me.
It looks, if I had to pick a squad, I don't know about the point spreads, but it'd be Boston. And that first game of the series, Boston was a little tired because their previous series went 7 games, and I think where they have one day in between. So,
right.
But they turned it around, and Bosch is playing again. I think he's going to get some more minutes from Miami, but I don't think it's going to make a difference. And based on the NBA Final Four, it looked like no matter what, it was going to be a good matchup in the finals, just a question of who. But what's shaping up to be Oklahoma City-Boston in the finals looks like the old guard versus the new guard, the old big three versus the new big three. And that I'm sure, whatever there is, Super Bowl or finals, they're always looking for plot lines. But I think that'll be the plot line if it's OKC in Boston.
Yeah. Whether or not the Miami Heat lose in Thursday night's Game 6 against the Boston Celtics or Game 7 on Saturday or in the NBA Finals, to me that isn't the point. The nagging question, and I'm reading an article here, does it have anything to do with when the Miami Heat will lose, assuming they fail to take the title again, or how, which I don't think they will. The real point at this juncture has more to do with the idea that we're just as ill-conceived in our judgment of the Heat as a unit as this team's players, ownership, and front office was putting this group together. Take away the bluster of those frightening week-long spans that made the group look like world beaters. Were the Heat ever proper championship contenders? Now, I don't know if you've been watching the playoffs, Jeff, and the after game analysis Shaq, Kenny Smith, or Charles Barkley, or Chris Broussard, Magic Johnson, John Barry, or Michael Wilbon. But each one of those groups of men. Said the same thing on two different occasions, two different games, last two games. They said that Miami Heat, and I've been saying this a long time, a lot of other people have been saying the same thing. It's nothing new, and they've even said it that it's well known in the locker rooms throughout the NBA. And they didn't say it exactly the same way I'm going to say it, but they said some of the words I'm going to say. They said that Miami is a real Hollywood, that the players are real Hollywood. They're full of bluster when it's showtime, basically. When they're slamming and dunking, they're up by 10, 15 points or whatever. And everything is lack of a better word, hunky-dory. But when the game gets tight, when the cheeks get a little puckered and tight, that sphincter gets a little smaller. It seems like the mental aptitude and the heart, the fortitude, internal fortitude of the Miami Heat. And I'm surprised that Dwayne Wade has caught the LeBron virus in this. Mental discipline and the fortitude internally, heart-wise, to win these close games. And it's been proven out, this veteran team, this old, supposedly over-the-hill Boston Celtic team, that the Heat were, I wouldn't say going to go run roughshod, but they were going to handle them pretty handily, and it was like a fait accompli that they were going to get into the NBA Finals. Not that I say that they still won't, but this is a game that they have to play in a site that they haven't won. I think the record in Boston is like Within the last 15, 16 games, they only won like one game in Boston. So they got a lot of things going against them, including their mental frame of mind, including the getting out coached. All that is what I'm saying is all that is what I just laid out to you, Jeff. I don't know if you have anything else to add to that, but what do you think about the things I just spewed about?
A little bit. The Heat, they're not Hollywood. They're South Beach. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
That's
right,
what they should be called. The South Beach Heat. That's their new name. It fits
right.
their image. And, you know, Wade is the one guy, the one starter who's got a ring. But
right.
he doesn't look like a champion when he's at the foul line.
Right.
He's been shooting fouls lousy. And I'm thinking back a couple of years ago, the Lakers had a guy deep on their bench, the Russian guy, the name escaped, Sasha Bujevic, something like that. This guy
right.
was, not just a backup. There's different levels of backup. He wasn't in their top 70 guys. And that guy was able to sink clutch foul shots. And Wade can't shoot fouls anymore. That blows me away. And, the thing is, talk about Showtime makes me think of the classic Laker teams with Magic. And they had that reputation for, they were popular with the fans, the media, yada, yada. And, guys like Magic, they had a lot of off-the-court opportunities, endorsements, and things like that. But those guys were all about basketball when it counted. And, that even included practice, which is important, unless you ask Allen Iverson. And they had a sit-down. They had
right.
a sit-down with a bunch of guys from the Showtime Lakers, and it spanned from, guys who were with the team in the early 80s to some guys who were with them later on. But they were all guys who won championship during those classic years. And they were telling stories about, in practice, guys beating the crap out of each other. They were serious, They, everyone thought they were some kind of glamour team, but if they were, they wouldn't have won all those rings. That was a real team, despite the packaging and whatever. And, of course, the league, of course, jumps on that because back then, every Sunday for NBA on CBS, you had a choice. It was either a Celtics game or a Lakers game, and you never saw anybody else. I mean, those were the two best teams in the league for a lot of years, but they really weren't big on showcasing the rest of the league. It just was those two teams, and that's it. So, and I don't see that in Miami. I just don't see that. You cannot compare them in any way to classic teams like the Lakers because those teams worked hard and they had it when it counted, So, and
well,
it is going to, believe me, it's going to be a long off season for LeBron. I mean, I don't care how many Shirley Temples he's drinking in the club in South Beach. I don't care how many honeys he's got around him. Still, he's a man. He's got feelings. And there's going to be gutless people making rude comments to him and whatever. Maybe not to his face, but it's going to be a long off season for that guy because he's still very unpopular with a lot of people.
Hey, yeah, and this just would add salt on the wound and confirm a lot of what people are saying about LeBron that include myself, that he's not a closer. When we get talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder, then you can talk about what a closer does, but we're talking about the Heat now. I don't know. I don't see a rosy picture for the Heat tonight. I know they're going to try to get their best shot, and like you said, Chris Bosh is supposed to have substantial minutes. But with the pressure of the situation being down 3-2 and on a hostile court, the pressure of being out-coached, basically, Doc Rivers has, in my opinion, coached rings around Eric Bolstra in his series. And Chris Bosh, even though a lot of people think that they it could happen, but the truth of the matter is when Chris Bosh was in the game for the 12 to 14 minutes he was in the game, the Miami Heat were minus 6 or 7 points in that stretch of time when he was in the game. Now, maybe it'll improve with the more minutes and a better feel for what he can do in the second game back from about a month-long injury. But you're going to have a highly motivated, veteran, proven championship team. These guys have been champions before. They know what it takes to be champions. They have heart of a champion. I opened up with Paul Pierce, which is one of the better clutch, one of the best clutch persons in the NBA, without a doubt. I may not be a big Boston Celtics fan, being a Knicks fan, quite naturally. But you got to respect the ability of some guys, and I respect the ability of the Boston Celtics to play as a team. I really expect the ability of Doc Rivers to coach that team, because you got four guys with big egos. You got Ray Allen, you got Kevin Garnett, you got Paul Pierce, and Rajon Rondo is a wild card. He's a little loopy. But he's one of the best point guards in the playoffs, and to go against the Heat, to go against that with Dwayne Wade and LeBron James, all I got to say is, LeBron, if you want to be the king, you want to be the chosen one. You may have scored 35 or whatever it was last game, 34. You're going to need more than that. You're going to have to summon. You're going to have to will your team to win against this determined Boston Celtic team. They're going to come out. Let me put it this way. I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure they're going to come out determined to close this game out, not wanting to go back to South Beach, not wanting to see that high-flying South Beach type of attitude you guys have when you play well. So we'll see what happens. Jeff, you got anything else that you want to
I got to agree with you on something real obvious. I mean, you got to respect Paul Pierce, because also I'm a Knicks fan, so, there's never a lot of love for Boston and Philly. But, sometimes, you got to give respect where it's due. And Paul Pierce was a great player on a lot of lousy Celtic teams. And, he didn't make a stink. And then late in his career, they put together a supporting cast for him. And, they've been saying it the past few years, but this might finally be the last hurrah. And, it's hard to imagine Boston being in the same position next year. But you never know. But there were years when, the Celtics were Paul Pierce, Antoine Walker, and Larry Moe and Curley as their starting lineup,
Right, exactly.
And, he kept showing up and playing hard.
Exactly. We have a caller from the 321 I'm going to bring in and see what this guy has to say. Caller from the 321, welcome to the FSP Crew Show. State your name and tell me what you got to say.
David Green. Wanted to let you all know, I just think the difference in all this is the closers. They're talking about it. It's the supporting cast. The Celtics bench is outperforming the Heat bench. LeBron and D-Wade, they can't score 102 points combined. If they could, they would, and that could probably cause them to win. Otherwise, everything else the same. They're both these games have gone down to the wire. It's about closing. Pierce hits that last shot, the dagger in the heart last game. They had opportunities that some of their the Miami bench couldn't make those last-minute shots. That's the biggest difference, I think.
Well, I got to ask you a question there, David. Dwayne Wade, when he played with Shaq and they won the championship years back, he was considered a closer. What happened? What do you think happened since LeBron's got there, Chris Bosh's got there? Why can't Dwayne Wade be the same closer he was years back?
Because it's not the same offense they're running. You know, Shaq always the in-out. You know what I mean? They don't have a true big man. They don't have a true center. It doesn't allow for them. You know, they're double teaming him. They're trapping. They're, you know what I mean? They don't have a big man presence to get the ball inside and get out and get that free. You know, they got, you know, between 2 and 3 3-point shooters out on the outside while they're trying to penetrate. If you don't have a big man in there to try and hold people off, it's they're going to take those shots. Haslam, he's had a great series. He's doing well. But how many points is he scoring?
Well, that's true.
That's Shaq, Shaq, put him inside. They double-team Shaq. He pops it outside. He can make those jump shots. Who are they putting the ball inside to?
Chris Bosh.
He's not been playing.
Right. Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, he played a short time. In 14 minutes he played, he had 9 points and 7 rebounds. He's going to play extended minutes. He's going to play extended minutes this game, and we'll have to see if it's going to make a difference. The point differential when he was in there this past game was -6, so it didn't make a difference when he was in there, but that was his first game back from extended time off, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
right?
But did Garnett score as easily when Bosch was in there than when Haslam was in there?
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, Garnett had those easy over-the-top dunks when Haslam was playing him. I don't think that happens when Bosch is playing him. I don't think those plays happen when Bosch was on the court. But Bosch comes off the court, Haslam, he's a rebounder. He's not necessarily, all-pro defense.
Great. Okay. All right, well, thanks for calling in, David. Do you have anything
else?
Thanks for having
me. I appreciate it. Nope, I appreciate you all.
Okay, take care.
Thanks
and
a lot.
Good night.
You too.
All right, bye. Okay, we have him. He made some good points there about the closing portion of the Heat. Some things we've been talking about, Jeff, that these guys, they're good players. I don't think they play well together. I think that they both need the ball to excel in what they do. And they don't seem like they play well off each other. And like I said, I think Dwayne Wade has caught the virus from LeBron about not being able to close out when it's needed. I mean, they try. Let me put it this way: I can't say they try. I can say that for the most part, Dwayne Wade tries, and LeBron really defers a lot to other players to make the shot. And like David was saying, those players who, when given the opportunity, haven't been able to do the same things that the role players in Boston, like Petrus, I'm trying to think who else was instrumental in it, in the wins, the role players. I can't think of anybody else other than Petrus who was big in the last game. What do you think, Jeff?
This is very obvious, but the difference between the end of an NBA game, the last 2-3 minutes, and the rest of the game is you get a lot more time to think and a lot more time to get tight late in the game. And that might be the problem. I mean, that's part of the problem, you know?
Yeah, and one of the guys, and David said it in the chat room, it would be Bass. Yes, he was instrumental in the game too. Yes, and we'll see what happens. I mean, they're playing at home. The crowd is going to be absolutely nuts in Boston, and the Heat have a major problem on their hands. The pressure is going to be astronomical on the whole team, including the coaching staff. To get this win, to get back to Miami with a chance to close it out in Miami. I don't think they're going to do it. I don't know if these statistics are about a team that wins game five. What the statistics are that they win these series, but it's got to be pretty high, I would think, especially when that team who won the third game, or won the fifth game, is going back home with a possibility of closing it out and heading to the championship. All right, we talked about the Miami Heat and their woes. Well, there was no woes from OKC. There were no woes from the fans wanting their big-time player, or one of their big-time players. In fact, their scoring champion, their big-time player, and in my opinion, the MVP of this year, which they were chanting after they were handing him the Western Conference Finals trophy. Kevin Garnett came up big time in the game last night, and willed his team when they were down 15 at halftime. The San Antonio Spurs, Jeff, scored 54 points compared to, I think it was 40-something points. I forget exactly. 54 points, so it's a 15 point. They had 39 points. They scored 39 points in half, and San Antonio was up 15 points at halftime. San Antonio in the second half scored the same amount of points in each of the third and the fourth quarter, 18 points. They scored a total of 36 points in the second half. They cut that lead down. They cut the scoring down quite naturally. If you look at the math, 54 points to 36 points. So this minus 18 points from first half to the second half, and Oklahoma with their young legs, with their stud three, and with their big time one, meaning Kevin Garnett, said, "Come jump on my back, and I'll take you home." And that's exactly what I'm talking about when I'm saying clutch. The guy came through when it counted, and the other players, meaning James Harden, meaning Russell Westbrook, and meaning Derek Fisher, they all contributed down the stretch of the game to pull the game out and win by a comfortable 8 or 9 points, or whatever it was. So I don't know if you watched the game. I watched it from front to back, and I was very impressed with, especially in the second half, how the Oklahoma just took the game over, and they were just overwhelmed. San Antonio was just overwhelmed by the ability of Oklahoma when they counted.
I was listening to a lot of the game on the radio, and I mean, San Antonio is the real deal, but Oklahoma City's better and younger, and I mean, that's, you know, everyone's talking about their age, you know, about their youth, and experience is nice, but talent is more important, and then they do have a veteran on the bench, Derek Fisher, which.
Right.
You know, he's going to be trying for another ring. I'm sure his pal Kobe's pissed off about that, because he was ticked off when the Lakers got rid of him.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And believe me, Kobe is nuts. I mean, in a good way. I mean, Kobe's the kind of guy who wants to beat the poop out of his grandma if he's playing her in gin rummy. I mean, that's the kind of guy he is. And, you know, you want a guy like that for the star of your team. You want a guy who never, ever wants to lose. That's the way Jordan was and still is. Unfortunately, the team that he owns is the only way they could lose more games is if the NBA started having doubleheaders. You know, one of the worst teams in history. But that's the way Kobe is. So, you know, one of the few veterans in Oklahoma is on the bench in Derek Fisher. But, you know, talent is more important than experience. And it's very noticeable with Oklahoma, and you wonder if they could be like San Antonio, one of the few powerful small market teams in the NBA. You know, you don't know if they're going to be able to afford to keep all three of their stars. And Harden was making me think of an all-time great player who I saw the end of his career, probably the first great six-man, John Havlicek. I'm glad I saw the end of his career, and that guy was a hell of a player. And even though it was the end of his career, that guy was all hustle. And even though he was a sixth man, he got starter minutes like Harden. And for a while, he got surpassed, I think, first by Abdul-Jabbar. Havlicek, I think, for a while, was the leading scorer in NBA history. And most of which is the sixth man. And one of the many things he was good at, and this unfortunately you can't do anymore, he was a master of the hand pat. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they outlawed that years ago. And the people who don't know, the hand pat is when you're a defender, you could rest your flat hand on the back of the jersey of the guy who has the ball. And you usually see it with guards when they're defending each other. And from other players said, Havlicek was the master of that because it looked like he just would have a flat hand on your back. But they said he's really grabbing you, and the next day you're all bruised up from getting manhandled by this guy.
Exactly, exactly. Well, just think of this, Jeff. Just think of what these guys have done. I mean, last year they ran into the Dallas Mavericks in the finals, and they got beat, which was an older, experienced, more team. This year, they meet Dallas in the first round. They get rid of Dallas. In the second round, they play the Lakers. They get rid of the Lakers. Then in the finals, they play the San Antonio Spurs. And they beat the San Antonio Spurs. Do you realize, and I don't know if you realize this or not, the Dallas Mavericks, the L.A. Lakers, and the San Antonio Spurs, they have won 10 of the last 13 championships, and the Oklahoma City Thunder has beaten these guys. That's like crazy. That's unbelievable that they could go through Dallas, L.A. Lakers, and San Antonio Spurs. That's a mark of a champion to be able to hit that murder. In my opinion, that's murderer's row in the Western Conference, and to get to the finals. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's a hell of an accomplishment, in my opinion.
I did hear about it, and it is noteworthy. And it's a historic run, but they still got one more big hurdle to go.
Right, right.
Likely going to be Boston, and Boston, not everybody on the team, but their big three has a ring, so that's not going to be easy. So, but I'll tell you, if hopefully for Boston, they could wrap it up tonight and not have to go a seventh game because this way they'll get a little rest. And that's what hurt Boston at the beginning of this series was it took them a full seven for their previous. And this time of year, it just helps the team so much. If you could sweep somebody in four games or even five, you get those extra days rest, and it helps the next round.
Mm-hmm. Realize these guys are Durant and Westbrook are 23, and Harden is 22. That's crazy. To have as young as these guys are, to be where they're at so early in their careers is absolutely mind-boggling. And you can't see, as long as these guys don't, the egos don't get too big, and they still want to play with each other and are able to get accommodated financially, these guys, I'm thinking this can be some type of dynasty as long as that they keep the core three together and keep some relatively good pieces like they do now around them. I can't see anything but an upward upward arrow for these guys. And the thing about it, about 14 seconds left in the game, give or take or something like that, when the game was already decided by then for all intents and purposes. Kevin Durant, 23-year-old, three-time scoring champion, second in the league, in my opinion, but should have been first in the MVP voting, perennial all-star, and well-respected throughout the league, 23 years old, walks over to his mother and his brother, gives them a big hug, and for all intents and purposes, said, thanks for believing in me, or thank you. I mean, the guy is a classy guy. The guy I'm on a show with on tomorrow, Mac Williams, who is involved with the Goodman League, who Kevin Durant plays in the Goodman League every year, knows Kevin Durant very well, and always says Kevin Durant is a very good dude, real good guy, real humble guy. He loves playing basketball, loves playing team basketball. It's all not all about him. It's about the team, which is very, very rare in a superstar like Kevin Durant, who can only, in my opinion, get better. I don't know how you feel about what I just said, but I'll stop talking and let you.
Now, I'm obviously impressed with Oklahoma. And they showed after the game, and there was no microphones, but you could see the way the players were after the game. And you know, these are young guys in their early 20s, and they just were very gracious, and they seemed very classy. You know, just the body language, everything, the way they conducted themselves. Because they don't just have three great players. They got three good guys, you know. And
right.
That helps. And the thing is, there definitely is a strong potential for an Oklahoma dynasty. But that's so hard to predict because there's physical issues, there's, you know, mental issues, somebody can get a big head. It's just,
right.
With sports, because you're not dealing with machines, you just can't project. I mean, classic example, a few years ago when Alex Rodriguez, and you want to talk about a head case, you know, he put a lot of talent there, you know.
Yeah, sure.
He reached a milestone. I think it was the 500th homer. And if you live in the New York area, it really stinks when he's approaching a milestone. It takes him so long to reach it. That's all you hear about for 2 weeks. Because, you know, when he was – I think that 500th homer took him about a couple of weeks. And you just – it's all you hear about. It was crazy. And a reporter made the mistake based on his age and his production – projecting how many homers Rodriguez could retire with, and it was a ludicrous number. They were saying 1,000 homers isn't out of the question. And I'm thinking that's very high. I'm thinking, you know, at the time it was before he started having physical breakdown, but you know, he's a man. He's not a machine. And even if you're in good shape, eventually you're going to slow down. And I think the Yankees are rejecting the length of that contract. And there's a lot of other contracts like that. Even Pujols, by the end of that contract, he's going to be a liability. These guys, like, you know, yeah, they work out, but so does everybody else.
Right.
It's very hard to, some guys do it to a point, but for a great player to be as productive in their late 30s is very difficult. I mean, they could still be good, they could still contribute, but rarely at those high levels. And people got to realize that when they're making the contracts. But I don't care, because it's not my money. So,
well, I don't want to get off the beaten path, but since you brought up Alex Rodriguez and him breaking down, do you think he's breaking down because the fact is he may not be taking steroids like he used to be in the past, and his body can't recover as quickly as it could when he was taking steroids?
Well, that's a strong possibility, and I don't know if you remember this. I admitted, and I did it on a show, and I've admitted this to friends, that when was this? This was a long time ago. But you know, prescribed by a doctor. I was on steroids for a week.
Right.
And I know this isn't scientific, but that stuff is no joke. There's a reason the stuff has heavy penalties and guys still mess around with it. Because, and everybody tells me it was all in my head, but I know it wasn't because I wasn't expecting it. I was on steroids for a week because I was about to have my tonsils taken out. I was in a lot of pain, and
right.
they didn't want to prescribe me any more antibiotics, so the doctor prescribed steroids. And, you know, I thought nothing of it. I was like, oh, whatever, steroids, no big deal, you know. And let me tell you, buddy, no exaggeration, it wasn't mental. The end of that week, I felt like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Really?
I swear. And because of that, there is no doubt in my mind, this is just based on my own personal experience, but it's legit. There's no doubt in my mind that steroids is not cheating. And at the end of that week, I thought to myself, now I know why all these muscle heads mess with this stuff. This stuff is for real. And it has, you know, legitimate value, but it is cheating. And anything that powerful has to be very, very dangerous.
Well, Jeff, let me ask you this then. Since you have experience that I haven't, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot or anything, that 1 week that you were taking it,
right?
What were you experiencing mentally? And I imagine that's what you were talking about. What were you experiencing mentally? Supposedly,
it was more physical. There was only a little mental because back then, mm-hmm. you know, I was going to the gym a little bit. I was going to the gym about three times a week. I was in good shape for me. Now, you know what I mean? It wasn't like anybody was throwing dollar bills at me or anything. But for me, I was in good shape. So I was in a routine. So I went about my usual routine. And the way it was prescribed, it gets better as the week goes on because you take one pill the first day, two the second, three the third, et cetera, et cetera. And I, you know, took it as prescribed. And it really didn't. I didn't really feel it until the seventh day because I'd been taking it for a week. I was up to the full dose. And the thing was, I did my normal workout, but the difference was it felt terrific, not like I was going to drop dead any second.
Right.
I mean, my arms felt like Uzis. I mean, I worked out for like 2 hours nonstop, like the greatest workout ever, I mean, for me. And I could have stayed there the way I felt. I could have stayed there all day. And I remember thinking to myself, don't push my luck because I don't want to hurt myself and then feel it when this stuff wears off.
Right, right.
I mean, it was only a tad mental. I mean, maybe I just felt good because I was having a good workout. But there is a mental aspect of it, I think, that, you know, guys taking that are, you know, just feeling really, really good about themselves. But then also, I mean, I didn't mess around with it that long. You know, you got the roid rage, which that's something I wouldn't want to mess around with.
Yeah, that's what I was inquiring about. If you had that type of feeling or mentally or
anything
like that.
Nothing like that. It was all positive, and you know, and none of those other side effects either. So don't go there.
No, I wasn't going to go there. I'm just mainly concerned about the mental part of it, about the roid rage. That's what I was talking about.
Also, I used it. I didn't abuse it, you know. But I definitely, there probably is that potential, and I heard that's a legitimate side effect, is the roid rage. And I'd hate to see this stuff outlawed because it definitely has some great, you know, when taken properly, has some great properties, but there is a strong potential for abuse.
Okay. All right, we got about 15 minutes left in the show. Let's bring up this. There's a couple of guys, one mainly that I know you. He's got quite a few tweet followers, or Twitter followers, I should say. He's pretty much kept his mouth shut when he was with the organization, but that organization has just recently released him. I'm talking about Chad Ochocinco not being able to be a Patriot again. He got released by the New England Patriots. Give me your thoughts about Ochocinco and him getting released.
Yeah, I think this might be the end of the road for Ochocinco. I don't think he's a bad guy, maybe a little selfish at times, but had a horrible year last year. At least he had enough common sense to keep his mouth shut, keep collecting a check, and get a ring, because there's guys who just, you know, their egos are so out of control they wouldn't grasp that. And but he caught all the 15 passes last year. I mean, for a guy like Ocho, that's nothing. But his last 1,000-yard season was 2009. His 2010 wasn't that terrific. So now, what's it going to be? He's going into his 12th year. I think he'll have trouble getting with an NFL team, because one of the problems for a guy like him is in some situations you could see him maybe fighting for a third or fourth receiver slot, but I don't believe he plays special teams. And most teams, they want their backup wide receivers to play special teams. There's only so many guys on the roster.
Right.
So that could hurt his chances. And he did have, you know, despite whatever, he had a good attitude in New England, but I don't think at this point in his career he's going to start running down covering kicks.
Yeah, you're right. No, he's not built for that anyway. I mean, the only thing he's built for in special teams is trying to kick off or kicking field goals, because he used to play soccer, but that's not going to happen. All right, let's talk about this, Jeff. You had brought it up just before we went on the air, and I had said we get a chance, we'll talk about it. I want to talk about the June 9th, which happens to be on Saturday, quite naturally, and talk about the Triple Crown, the third leg of the Triple Crown. The first two legs was won by in Kentucky Derby, and the Preakness was won by, which is really a heck of a name for a horse, is I'll Have Another, which is very catchy. And he's the overwhelmingly favorite, 4-5, to win the Triple Crown, which hasn't been done in quite a few years. The trainer has a rocky career of is due to serve a suspension soon. Talk to me about I know you like horse racing. I like horse racing also. Talk to me about I'll Have Another and your thoughts and whatever else you want to expound on.
All right, the Sport of Kings. Now we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a casual fan. I prefer the trotters, harness racing. But this time of year, I usually pay attention to the thoroughbreds. And like many years, we got a chance at a Triple Crown winner this year. And there's a debate whether or not that'll be good for racing, because, you know, part of it is because it's been over 30 years since there was a Triple Crown winner. When there's a chance for it, Aqueduct Racetrack, where the Belmont Stakes is packed. I mean, and if there's that chance, it's the most exciting 2 minutes in sports, because it's so historic. And personally, though, because of the cloud that I'll Have Another is under because of the trainer, To me, it makes me think of when Mark McGwire was going for the home run record. Yeah, it was good for baseball at the time, but there was whispers. And then years later, those whispers turned out to be true. And I think this could be a similar situation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this trainer, I have it posted on my Facebook page. My real name is Jeff Goldberg, if anybody wants to check that out. I mean, he's been suspended a lot in different states, and he's
right.
about to get suspended in New York.
Right.
And you'd like to think, and it's hard to find guys like this in horse racing, a horse and a trainer would be above reproach, so this way a great accomplishment would never be tainted. And there's, unfortunately, there's the possibility of a Triple Crown win, but then it could get tainted later on. And also, part of these medication abuses lead to horses being euthanized. And the trainer, I think his name is O'Neill, he's had a lot of that, unfortunately. And there's been a lot of that at Aqueduct, and I don't want to see that either. Because there have been some big-time races the past few years that have had tragic injuries for star horses, and I don't want to see that at all. And you want to hear my pick, though?
Well, let me put it this way. Now, let me just run this first to you. Now, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but the old horses had a report by noon on Wednesday to a detention barn, which is monitored around the clock. That was the barn was set up as a part of a last-minute change to ensure a fair running of the race. I think maybe had to do with maybe O'Neill, for one thing. Like I said, it's monitored around the clock. Anyone interacting with the horses, including trainers, veterinarians, exercise riders, and owners will have to be logged in and out. And from what I understand, there won't be any interaction with the horse, like veterinarian or anything like that, the day of the race, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that. But besides that, I want you to give me your analysis of what you think is going to happen on the race. And who you think is going to win the race? Is it going to be I Have Another, or will it be a surprise horse to upset and not have a Triple Crown winner? Talk to me, Jeff.
I mean, it sounds funny to root against the horse. You almost feel like a jerk. Like, what do I have against this animal? You know,
right?
Because I like horses, but the reason I'm rooting against I'll Have Another, which I feel like a jerk just saying it.
No, you're not. No, you're not.
But I told you because of the trainer. But also, there have been better horses or horses as good who haven't won the very difficult third Jewel on the Crown. So because of that, that's why I'm kind of rooting against them. And there's reasons the Belmont is so difficult. It's because it's a mile and a half, which is
right.
much longer than what American horses are used to. And there's other factors, too, that, I mean, it's only 2 weeks after the Preakness, and in modern horse racing, horses don't race every 2 weeks. That used to be the standard, but now it's not. So that's one of the issues. Now, I mean, I'll Have Another's obviously a very, very talented horse, but not a mutter. And this is one of the things with horse racing. You got to do your homework. And there's already been a lot of rain in the New York area. But if there's a lot of rain or enough rain between now and post time, I think that's going to hurt. I'll Have Another. That's going to really hurt. And if that's the case, I like Union Rags. And I posted this on my Facebook page, so there's proof. Because also Union Rags has some history on that track, which I think is important because of the length. And my dark horse, my long shot is Street Life.
Street Life. Okay.
Yeah.
The reason why you like Union Rags is because he's won the Champagne last October in a Breeders' Cup Stakes. No,
and,
it wasn't Breeders' Cup Stakes. It was just the Grade One at the Belmont. But that was only at a mile.
Yeah, but I don't know, experience and a good horse, and was in the other Triple Crown races, and I think he's good in the slop. And that's what I'm hoping for, is the slop. And I think that's going to help the rest of the field.
What do you see in street life that attracting you to him as the long shot that you think could make a difference?
Same thing, and I think it's also when you get the long shots, those odds are very approximate. I think he's around 30-1, which I think from what I've seen is fairly accurate. He is close to 30-1. He's not 100-1 or 500-1,
mm-hmm.
but he does have something of a chance. And the slop might be the difference, so that's what I'm hoping for.
All right. I haven't, to tell you the truth, I looked at the other two races, other Triple Crown races in depth, and I gave my analysis, and both times my horse came second, and quite naturally he's not running in this race. So I usually give my analysis on the day of the race on the FSP show, and that's what I'm going to do. I have to look at the race and crunch the numbers like I always do and see who I think could possibly either beat or not beat. I'll have another. He had a strong Kentucky Derby and even stronger Preakness in the numbers wise. But like you know and I know, the last three races he had was a mile and eighth, which is short of a mile and a half. Kentucky Derby had a mile and a quarter, which is shorter than a mile and a half. And then, quite naturally, the Preakness is a mile and 3/16, which is the shorter of the two races in the Triple Crown. And now he's got to go further with his closing style, because he pretty much closes on the field. And I don't know if he can do it, but I'll give you my analysis on Saturday about I'll have another. I picked against him twice. I still may do it again, and I still may be wrong for the third time. But come Saturday, which happens to be my 28th wedding anniversary too at the time, so I'll have to try to put in my wager in between satisfying whatever my wife wants to do on Saturday. So
congratulations on the anniversary.
Thanks.
I was thinking of going to the Meadowlands Saturday, but there's also across the highway, they're having a big soccer game, so I don't know if I'm going to have to deal with all that traffic because that's going to be a mess.
Yes.
I mean, I don't want to be a baby, but I don't want to spend an hour in my car for something that's 5 miles away from me. But now,
right.
this is very unscientific, but when you play a real long shot, you could bet them to show and still get a decent payday.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you know, street life around 30-1 to show can still give you a few bucks. Some
absolutely.
Horses, it's not even worth it. So that's one of my unscientific methods for horse betting.
Right. All right, Jeff, we come to the end of the show. You have any closing comments you want to say?
Well, congratulations again, and look forward to next week when the third member of our big three, and he's no Chris Bosh, he's legitimate. he's legitimate big three guy. Hopefully Black will be back with us next Thursday, and join us again next week.
Okay. That was Jeff the Joker. I'm Jerry, a.k.a. the Master. And this is the FSP Crew Show. We're here every 8 o'clock on Thursdays. We'll be back next week. Tune in then. Also, tomorrow, 7 o'clock, be the me as the co-host, Mac Williams as the host. It's called No Chaser. That's the show. Same place, same bat channel. And then when you don't like that one, you can go on Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock. Will be the FSP show, the home show. With Vic Gardner as the host. I'm not sure if I'll be on that show this week. I may be on briefly just to give my analysis of the Belmont, and then I'll get off because my wife and I may have I'll have other obligations. And then on Sunday, we'll recap the and preview the finals, which is going to take place starting Tuesday. The master plan, 10 o'clock in the morning to 11 o'clock in the morning, just an hour show. And then Compassion Dakini at 4 o'clock on Tuesday with Kim Fun. A lot of shows, a lot of different perspectives on each one of those shows. You take your pick and see what you like, and we'll be appreciative, whatever you choose. With that being said, from the Joker and from me being JT, enjoy your night. Enjoy the heat in Boston tonight. We'll see what happens if there's another game or we get the second half of the NBA Finals on the Eastern Conference. FSP crew is out.
Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy sports and politics crew.
Yeah,
check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew.
Yeah, come on.
Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew.
Yeah.
Fantasy Sports and Politics.